All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Into the Apocalypse, episode number 20, I believe.
Sounds good.
It's 2:30 on a Tuesday afternoon.
Which doubles as a Friday for me.
Oh, it's your Friday night.
It's my Friday night. I'm going to party hard.
That's fantastic.
I had a good Friday, too. I think I opened the mind of a 20-year-old today.
Oh, yeah? How did you do that?
Oh, it started with talking about giants and ancient archaeology. And my last words to him when I was on my way out this morning or this afternoon were to basically, you know, yeah, man, keep going down this flat earth rabbit hole and just keep an open mind. And he was totally like into it.
Had you mentioned flat earth prior to saying that?
Not flat earth, but I had mentioned Tartaria, a few other things. He's currently in college.
Yeah.
So a lot of things I've ever mentioned before, he's just kind of been like, that's retarded. you know, kind of under his breath, like, I don't have time for this shit. But something about the way of it today, he just kind of listened and he was, I could feel some eye rolls going on at first. But when I started talking about expanding earth theory, that the earth's always expanding. And I'd already talked about gravity a little bit. I asked him, because he was talking about, well, things that we all understand, like gravity. And I was like, yeah, man, can you explain gravity to me? And he realized in an instant that he had no idea how gravity works or what fucking gravity is or anything. And
what did he say?
For gravity?
Yeah.
He said, well, it's, you know, it's mass. And he just said it's mass, and then he stopped, and I was like, yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, some people think that centrifugal force, which is what pushes things out, like when you start going fast enough, it starts pulling things in again. We've just never been able to demonstrate that. And you know, he'd never thought about any of this kind of shit before. And yeah, it just kind of got him on a way. He wasn't really questioning gravity from what I said there, but then we worked our way and I mentioned expanding earth, and he took that. And I said, yeah. And some people even think that expanding earth works in such a way that as the earth is expanding, that's what creates that gravity that we were talking about earlier, that like the earth's actually pushing out and catching up with us all the time. You know, I don't know too much about that, but I've heard people, you know, posit things like that. I was just kind of throwing everything at him a little bit and seeing what would stick. And expanding earth, it really got into him. And we were, yeah, by the end of the, I don't know, it was probably like 3 hours that we were talking, you know, not solid, but because we were both working, doing different things, but passing and talking to each other. He was not totally turned off by the concept of flat earth by the end of the conversation. And I walked out of there going, yes.
That's awesome.
Who knows? Maybe he'll go home and get stoned tonight and forget everything, or he'll go home and get stoned tonight and never fucking think of anything the same ever again. Could go either way.
Or he'll go home, get stoned with his roommates, bring it up, get made fun of, and never mention it again.
And then be ashamed of himself. Who knows? The one thing I do know is that he will be getting stoned.
Yeah. Right on. You're changing the world one Zoomer at a time, right?
Yep, it's the best we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. What else is going on? What's going on with this presentation you got coming up?
Oh, I'm fucking excited for it. Elena Freelander. Freeland.
Freeland.
She's have you ever heard her talk before? Yes. Like on THC or Crow or any of those places? Yeah, she's pretty cool, man. I recently listened back to her in 2017 with Greg Carlwood. And that was really good. I listened to her a couple months ago. It was the last time she was on THC. But with this upcoming presentation here in the Northwest, I'm just kind of trying to take in whatever I can from her.
What's the topic she's bringing to you guys?
Geoengineering and transhumanism.
So she's going to be talking about chemtrails and stuff?
Chemtrails. I think she's going to talk about the space fence which is, as she describes it, it's all the electromagnetic signals, you could say waste, that we're shooting out all over the place, and that it's creating this massive barrier that she thinks is, it works in tandem with the chemtrailing and HARP, and that it's all, and 5G, and then the vaccines, and that they're trying to bring us into a transhumanist.
So all that stuff working in concert, and the vaccines kind of as the adjuvant, as you would say, to get all of that going.
Like they've been doing this for years out in our atmosphere and getting it going. And then they needed something to really bring us into it.
I mean, that makes the most sense to me, is just all this electromagnetism and making the sky metal, and then inserting metals into people to activate it. I think that's that. I love
it.
I
follow, you know, I'm open to it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool that she's coming up to our little corner of the world.
Lanny's the one that got it all going.
No. Some people from our freedom cell, she went to a potluck. I didn't make it to the potluck, but they were saying that they found out, and as I just had from her last time on THC, he brought up something about Fort Lewis McChord in relation to Antarctica. I can't quite remember what it was. They're doing, from Washington here, they're doing something down in Antarctica based out of Fort Lewis McChord. And she said, really? That's right down the street from me. And I was like, oh, she's like not far from here. Some other people in my freedom cell figured that out as well. And they contacted her and said, hey, would you come talk to our freedom cell? And she was like, sure, just buy me a train ticket. And so they raised a little bit of money between us and sent it off to her to get a train ticket. And she's into doing it.
You guys scraped together the $52 to get her from Spokane to Bellingham or whatever it was, or something.
Yeah. I think she's in the Olympia area. Yeah.
Okay.
No. Not much, but I guess she just had she needed a place to stay. So she's going to be staying at a friend of mine's house, and she would only take the train. She doesn't travel any other way, apparently. So she needed those, and she wanted to have a breakfast with kind of an inner circle of people. I think she asked that we make this a little more public than just our freedom cell, but then like a breakfast with the inner cadre, so to speak.
That's awesome.
So I'm looking really forward. It's going to be awesome to hear her speak. I don't know how long she'll talk, but I'm figuring at least an hour. Maybe we'll get a couple hours out of that.
Yeah,
on a Saturday evening. And I've arranged that I won't work the next day so that I can go and have breakfast with her and
get all fucked up and then get
we'll have mimosas and just get wasted.
Well, plant the seed for her to come on into the apocalypse, but
I plan on one way or another convincing her to do that.
Yeah. Well, we got to get our guests in the waiting room, and there's no real business to get into this week. I don't think I got any donations or emails or anything like that. All the good stuff will be in the show notes. Oh, and you are listening to the first annual OBDM Random Drawing Contest champion right here.
Right on, dude. That was awesome. I could have knocked me over when I heard him say Deborah gets red pilled.
I get three items of merch off their Teespring store. So if you behave yourself on this episode and help me do a good interview, maybe I'll give you one of those.
Oh, that'd be cool. I'll try to behave myself.
Yeah, I'll get you a goblin shirt. What size shirt do you wear?
Large.
Okay. So guys, today we're going to delve back into cryptids with our guest. Let's pause and we'll let him in. And this is going to be
pause
for pause. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Today we are lucky enough to get one of the feature dogman researchers in the world, Dexter De La Paz. You know him from Timeline Earth, the Scarlet Thread Society. What was the name of your old Dogman podcast?
Oh, it wasn't Dogman specific, but the other operation I'm still involved in and still going to this day is the Gaslight Hour.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Gaslight Hour was my intro to Dog Man. Your first few episodes there, you were going hard on cryptids and Dog Man and all of that, and I really ate it up. I really liked those.
Yeah, it's still one of my pet projects more than anything. Still one of my emphases.
When did you first come across Dogman?
That's a great question. And I suppose the way to answer it correctly would be to say when I moved to Kenosha, Wisconsin, oh, that must have been, I moved there in the fall of 2012 to attend college. And I started.
Did your mom give you a ride?
Yes.
Well, from Illinois? Did you cross state lines?
Well, I'm not going to get into the political issues here, but I'm a Wisconsinite born and bred.
Okay.
You know, there's certain memes around that question, and I'm very opinionated on them. Anyways, I moved from Western Wisconsin to Eastern Wisconsin full-time in the spring of 2014. And that's really where it began. Because as some people may or may not know, southeastern Wisconsin is one of the global hotspots for dogman activity, specifically through the persona of the Beast of Bray Road,
right,
which is a specific dogman that's been appearing there on and off since the 1930s. So coming into contact with that local legend over there in the Kenosha area is really what kicked off the interest. And as I said, that would have been roughly 8 years ago now.
Got it. And where is Bray Road in relation to Kenosha? Did you ever get a chance to go down and check it out, look for him?
Yeah, that's out in the county proper. It's out towards Elkhorn, which is in the next county over. I did not get a chance. Well, I have had opportunities to go up and down Bray Road, but there's very little opportunity to get off and really explore the land around it because it's all privately held, fittingly by the Bray family and by people in their community. And these people are maybe understandably very wary about having people just tramping around their farms looking for something that many of them don't believe exists, though, you know, certainly some of them are woke to the dogman question at this point. Now, thankfully, the other consideration is, though, is that the presumed feeding territory of the dogman and its sort of living occupied area of the map is sufficiently large that you don't need to be on Bray Road proper to find evidence or to be looking for evidence of its presence.
What kind of things would the Beast of Bray Road feed on?
The easy answer is meat. It is presumed to be carnivorous. And if you've done any sort of reading or research into dogman stories or listened to even just dogman encounters on like YouTube and whatnot, you'll find that there's many, many instances of them either stealing kills from hunters or trying to gather up things as a meat source or ruined carcasses in their presence. A smell of carcasses even follows them. So it would be safest to assume that they are primarily meat eaters. And that makes sense just from an energy density perspective too. You know, it's a lot easier to derive nutrients in the animal kingdom from meat.
Right. Is there evidence of like livestock mutilation or anything in the area?
Not as such, not as we recognize it in the trope of cattle mutilation or livestock mutilation. You know, when you use that terminology specifically, you tend to think of UFO style phenomena where you'll have things with organs cleanly removed, completely desiccated corpses overnight that are withered without actually showing signs of decay and whatnot. And that does not seem to be the case with most reported dogman encounters. Typically, it is an odd absence of small game that denotes their presence, as if it's just all been sucked clean from the area. And once in a while, you'll find badly mutilated corpses as opposed to the more surgically mutilated corpses that people tend to be talking about and referencing when they talk about livestock mutilation.
Yeah, I first heard the term livestock mutilation in relation to Skinwalker Ranch. So yeah.
Absolutely. And it's consistently reported out there. You know, that's a whole nother deal, but there's something weird going on out there.
Oh yeah, for sure.
What's the frequency of dogman reports? Do they come in one after another, or is it something people hear about and then you don't hear about it for a little bit and then hear it again?
Well, to my personal disappointment, I receive very few firsthand reports myself. But if you look at the usual suspect spots, you know, Phantom and Monsters, he does a fantastic job on his blog tracking all kinds of creature encounters. Things like the Dogman Research Project, I believe it's called, tracks encounters. Various YouTube channels have made their bones on it, though the veracity of their reports is, as always, questionable. It seems, if you take the dates from these various events and kind of suss them out, it seems a lot like UFOs in that it tends to come in waves, or the word that the UFO community uses is flaps. And not quite like clockwork, they're predictable to have major concentrations of them every 15 to 20 years, though there are plenty of other sightings additionally in between these major flaps.
Right.
What's kind of the history of sightings and dogman, and does it connect to old tales of the werewolf?
See, now that's a very good question, right? Because it sure seems like it should. The body of the dogman, both literally and metaphorically, is distinct from the werewolf, because the werewolf is said to be a shape changer, right? Whether it's cursed in some capacity or just as a result of nature shifts between forms, that is not the case with the dogman. The dogman is itself in a fixed form, an upright canid, though the similarities with the werewolf are nearly omnipresent otherwise, outside of that fact. Now, the other consideration here is that what many people might not realize is that culturally, the French have actually had a very large impact on werewolf lore. You know, I don't know where most people presume that their werewolf lore comes from, but I don't think many people would guess the south of France. The reason I need to bring that up is because if you look at dogman sighting patterns here in North America, not just the United States, but Canada as well, they tend to be patterned along French colonial migration routes.
Right, because there's that, I forget what they call the one, but there's one that's really big in the Cajun culture.
The Rougarou. Yep.
Yeah, I heard him talk about it on OBDM before.
Yep. So, and that gets exactly to what I was saying, because before the Cajuns settled down there in the bayou, they were up here. They were in Canada. They were in Wisconsin. They were in parts of Minnesota.
They were fur trappers, right? So they would have been up in those areas.
Yep.
And like Quebec as well, because that's why it's French Canada, correct?
Absolutely. To that point, there were, of course, also an unusually high amount of sightings in Quebec, of all places. Now, in the province, of course, not necessarily the city. So it's odd that you have these sightings that seem to be overlaid with culturally French areas. And I think that's something worth noting, especially with the tales of werewolves in southern France in the Renaissance and late Enlightenment periods.
Right.
What do you make out of that? Do you make out of that that it's more believable or less believable because it's concentrated amongst one kind of group of people?
So if this conversation hasn't been weird enough already, this is the part where I'll take it right off the rails with this theory.
That's where we prefer to be.
I think that it's entirely reasonable that it can be both more and less believable at the same time. Because if you're familiar with John Keel and his theory of the super spectrum and ultra terrestrials, you'll know that's a drum we beat a lot on the Gaslight Hour. I personally have talked about it a few other places. It's the idea that there are sentient, aware, and active beings on this earth that can exist without the commonly recognizable parts of the light and energy spectrum. Now, if this were to hold true, there are, of course, variations in various creatures' senses, and even within human senses. Some people are more perceptive to gradations in light and color than others. Some are less. Some have a better sense of hearing, of smell, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, where that gets interesting is if something is spotted in one place, perhaps that's its natural territory, or perhaps because it knows it can make contact in that place, it continues to be in that place, at which point you begin to have a sort of cultural osmosis, or maybe nothing so grand as that, perhaps just a mere behavioral feedback loop, especially if it's something that's trying to make contact for reasons of its own devices, its own plans, its own thoughts. Now, if you take the ultra-terrestrial theory even further and apply it to the dog man, these creatures seem to draw energy and attention and power from our own attention and our own believing in them. So it could become an issue where, because it was these people that noticed them first or were first able to consistently make contact, those are the groups and the regions they continue to appear in.
Okay, so you're saying if you've grown up in a culture, say the French culture, that has a high belief in these in the dog man or the werewolf, that it is more likely that you can have an experience with one because you're more open to it than someone who would be closed off and not believe.
That's correct. And now, to continue on that for just one moment, some people might say that and use it dismissively as in, oh, well, they're already primed to believe in it. Of course, that's what they saw. Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? Because just because you are culturally primed to believe in something, just because you're aware of the possibility of something, doesn't mean you're any more likely to see it. You know, I believe that isosceles triangles exist. That doesn't mean I'm more likely to see them manifested in front of my eyes on a dark night.
Well, and you need to be aware of things to see things, I kind of think, too. You know, like,
right.
if you're unaware of those triangles, you might see them, but you don't register those as isosceles triangles. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So just that idea that, oh, people are priming themselves to see these things and only UFO believers see UFOs it's a ridiculous idea, but some people will try and dismiss it on those grounds. So it's worth addressing that.
I guess a big question that comes up a lot of the time is, do you think they're actually physical flesh and blood, or are they some sort of spiritual entity? A little of both. Do they have like dens that they sleep in, or are they appearing from another dimension or outer space?
So I think we can probably safely rule out outer space.
Yeah, I do that for everything.
Yeah, space now, is fake.
Beyond that, though, you get into an interesting question as to whether they are physical or immaterial. They are certainly real. And so that leads to the question of, well, why hasn't anyone found a den? Why haven't we been able to locate a carcass? And, you know, Bigfoot theorists all have their ideas with regard to the Bigfoot, but dogman theorists don't really have a good answer for the dogman.
Like, there's nobody in the dogman community saying, oh, it's because they bury their dead.
Right, or at least not one that I'm aware of.
That's, what, know, we, that's what we hear a lot of. The
type of dude who's out there, but I haven't interacted with him anyways.
Yeah, we hear that a lot amongst like the old Bigfoot guys.
Sure. And, you know, I don't even think that's necessarily non-viable for a Bigfoot scenario. You know, it could be. I don't know enough about it. But with the dog man specifically, I tend to personally believe that they are immaterial, which is to say what most people would call spiritual beings, and that the reason they are so often seen eating high densities of meat and these calorie-rich diets is because they need the energy, not necessarily to fuel biological processes, but to be able to manifest into our reality. You know, they are collecting enough matter to create breaches in the spectrum and become contactable, which is the actual point in the first place.
Right.
Now, I think that this argument is actually supported by the fact that the first modern, quote-unquote modern dogman sighting was in the 1930s at an Indian burial mound outside a mental hospital. Now, it wasn't a patient that reported it, but rather a night watchman. So you have this sort of area where there's already strange ripples in the latent psychic energy. You have a nominally, potentially spiritual site in a graveyard. And you have right off the bat, someone who's not per se open to the experience, you know, someone who's not culturally primed to believe that this is happening. And yet this is where the thing chose to appear. Now, whether it had or had not fed, that's not covered in the story. And this could just be a folktale, but it would be those sort of thin areas in the hypothetical veil where they would be able to appear without having fed recently, or if they're beginning a hunting expedition. Now, that would neatly tie up why they do what they do, why we can't find them, and propose a theory of origin. So I like that answer in particular, but that could perhaps be too clean an answer for some critics.
Well, it could also feed into the waves, the flat, them coming in kind of flaps like that, of that it's difficult for them maybe to manifest as something, but and it would require, you know, the meat, the heavy feasting. So it's like something they can do for maybe a little while and then they have to subside, and, you know, then occasionally something comes in between. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And like I said, that does make the whole issue seem a lot simpler. It explains a lot of behavior, but again, that sort of thing's a little too weird and also a little too clean for a lot of critics.
Sure. Well, like, what's a good physical description of Dogman? Like height, eyes, teeth.
So they're not necessarily giant, but they are certainly taller than the average man.
Like 10 feet tall. That's what I think. But when I just think of it, I think of something about 10 feet tall, but it's been a while since I've really dived in on Dogman.
Yeah. You'll see some reports with them that big, but really oftentimes it's between 6 and 8 feet tall.
Okay.
So it's bigger than a big man, but not truly giant.
Sure.
The distinctive features are, of course, being completely furry. The claws on their hand analogs are not like dog claws necessarily. They're not a true paw. It's like a hand.
They have fingers.
Ends in a claw tip. Yeah. Fingers. How well developed claws. The fingers are will depend on just who saw it, right? The legs have the signature recurve of a dog leg. That's extremely hard to mistake for anything else. And that's something you have to consider whenever you're looking at sightings or criticisms of sightings. And their eyes will tend to be a black, a yellow, a red, not necessarily dog colored eyes, but what you associate more with monster eyes. Now,
are the eyes ever described as glowing?
Consistently, but not every single time. Yes.
Right.
Where would be some other hot spots besides the Kenosha, Wisconsin area that we get a lot of reported activity?
Louisiana, the Gulf Coast, all the way into Alabama, parts of Mississippi. Down along the Mississippi River, you'll see some in the Chicagoland burbs. Even occasionally by the Great Lakes military base, there's been at least a couple of sightings. You'll see some in Quebec and some in the Arcadia area up by the main Canada border.
Got it. How about, have you ever verified anything in the Pacific Northwest? That's where we are at.
I personally have not. Though if someone forwarded me a case from that area, I wouldn't be terribly surprised. You know, we talked about the sort of French culture tracking, but I don't think it's limited to that. There's no reason it couldn't be in a lot of other places too.
Yeah, it's strange. I live in Northwest Oregon, and this place was huge for beaver trapping. John Jacob Astor made his fortune here. Setting up beaver traps. So at some point there was probably French here. But do you, we're a big hot spot for Sasquatch. Have you run into any sort of symbiotic relationship with Bigfoot?
You know, it's not a bad question to ask, but if a connection like that exists, I'm not aware of it.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, because I've heard some people think that Bigfoot is interdimensional. I tend to subscribe to that more than he's the missing link or a giant monkey that lives in the Gigantopithecus or something like that.
Yeah, I think if it was a real flesh and blood being, or at least flesh and blood all the time, we would have found one by now.
Yeah. Let's see. I just had a... Okay, so... Is there any reports of anyone being let me rephrase this. Does the dog man always show up in a malevolent nature? Is he ever helpful? Is he always just scaring the shit out of people? Is there any cases of him ever actually physically harming anybody?
Yeah, so that's the interesting thing. You know, it's a trope with Mothman that it's not actually harmful and it only appears as a harbinger of natural harm to come.
Like the Silver Bridge collapse.
Yeah,
exactly. And you'll hear the same thing with Bigfoot, right? Where they're like taken and lost orphan temporarily until it can be returned to their family. And lots of things like this. But the Dogman seems peculiar among cryptids and fairies and other beings in that it is absolutely always malevolent. I have never once heard a case, a take, a report where the dog man has ever been friendly towards a person. And in fact, they tend to be accompanied by a sense of overwhelming dread and horror, almost like an aura around them. Now, as to whether they actually physically harm people, we probably wouldn't live to tell about it if they did. So it might be one of those non-falsifiable type things, but they have certainly, as I said, stolen kills from hunters. They've approached people's vehicles. They haven't shown any fear of interacting with people because they seem to believe, probably correctly, that they are above us on the food chain.
I think, have you ever heard of any cases of, I think I've heard on, what's the big show on YouTube that has like 500 episodes and they're all Dogman Encounters? Is it Dogman Encounters?
I think that's just the name of the channel. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard one where someone said that they like got big scrapes down the side of their car. So, but they weren't physically harmed, but their car was attacked.
Yeah. And that strikes me as entirely possible. As I've said, they are 100% not afraid of terrifying, of approaching motorists. Even going back to the 90s here in Wisconsin, there were instances where they would cross the road and they'd just stare at an oncoming vehicle to fuck with them. you know, pardon my French.
No. Got it.
So yeah, that sort of stuff's absolutely not out of the question. I just don't know if we'd know had a dog man actually attacked someone.
Right, right.
They're gonna finish the job.
Right. I think that's a safe assumption, yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, there's not like cases where someone gets swiped at, gets a huge, you know, claw mark across their chest or on the side of their arm or something like that, and they narrowly escaped. They're either harmed and we don't know about it because they finished the job, or they turned tail and ran.
Yeah, I had some sort of layer in between them to keep them safe from the being.
Right. Right.
You ever look into David Politis missing 411, anything like that?
Yeah, I absolutely love his work.
Yeah. Has he ever commented on it?
Well, you'll notice that when he does media interviews, commonly on Coast to Coast AM, occasionally on podcast networks of sufficient size, in his own documentary movies he's made, he doesn't comment much on what he suspects is causing the disappearances. You can intuit from his books and from his other previous works that he is probably a Bigfoot kidnapping theorist. And as such, I don't think he probably has much room for the dog man, but getting him to give away the big secret in public is probably too much to ask for. That said, I do find his work extremely compelling, as I said, and I'm not sure we'd necessarily be able to say that it's not the dog man. You know, even with how tightly he filters his cases, there's room for a lot of them to be from different origins. And it's, there's just a lot of people out there going missing, man. You can't chalk them all up to one thing, and that naturally then leaves room for multiple things.
Yeah, yeah, I get you there. What do you think's going on in the National Forest?
Going back to the long lost days of the Friends Against Government podcast.
Yeah, the old Fagcast.
Fagcast.
We're big fans. I
once upon a time made a claim on their show. I thought it could very well be cult activity. And I am not afraid to continue with that thesis and continue claiming that. You know, we know that there are illegal pot growth operations in places like that. We know that they're used by smugglers. We know that there's all sorts of criminal activity in them. And we know that the Park Service, or whatever the hell they're called, are really afraid to admit to and track crimes happening in the parks. So I think you could very safely get away with taking 5-10 people at a time out there and, you know, doing some real weird Dionysian shit in the woods. And now if 10, 20 groups have that same idea, or if 100 groups have that same idea, that's only 1,000 people, but that's enough to disappear a lot of bodies and make a lot of noise.
Yeah. How would you explain, you hear these stories of these people that are out hunting with, like, you know, 15 people, and one of them is just gone all of a sudden, and they're, you know, they're 50 yards off of each other, 50 feet away from each other, trying to grit out and flush the deer one way towards one guy to shoot it, which is a common hunting tactic. And what, all of a sudden, like, the old guy will just be gone.
Just gone.
Yeah. So continuing with the missing 411 theme, it's commonly assumed that that's a sort of fairy kidnapping situation, at least among red-pilled theorists. You know, the normie will say they got lost and then they were never found again, which, you know, okay, they're out there with a hunting party. You think the group couldn't find them?
Yeah.
But, you know, the people who are woke will say it's some sort of being kidnapping. And I think that especially when you factor in the fact that with cases like that, the clothes are always found neatly folded in one place together. There's never signs of animal attacks. And it always tends to happen in places with the same sort of wood growth and soil patterns. It seems extremely possible to me that it could in fact be a being kidnapping, because that gives me the impression also that it's a certain type of environment that's conducive to whatever could be doing those kidnappings.
You know what another weird statistic was for a lot of these missing people in the woods is a Germanic background. Have you ever heard that? I can't explain anything.
I have, but I have no idea what to make of that fact.
Yeah, I don't either.
You know, there's clearly something there, but I've got no idea what it is.
Yeah, Paul, you have a Germanic background. What's your thoughts on it?
Chud, I don't know. That'd never been brought to my attention before, but that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you follow that to though? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's bizarre.
Yeah. It's really, really strange. I have I've got a good friend, Dean Reiner, and he does a podcast called Up Is Down. You should definitely check it out. He's got a lot of really great conspiracy research and
targeted individual.
Yeah, he does a lot of stuff about TIs and Tracy Twyman and
he goes deep.
Yeah. But he had an experience in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest, which is out here in the Pacific Northwest in the Columbia Gorge on the border between Oregon and Washington. And he got lost in the woods and miraculously, you know, figured out where he was, but he said he was walking around in circles for a few hours and you know, in a forest it's a strange place. It's devoid of any sort of wildlife. It has all these water features like ponds and lakes, but they're all dead. It's really weird, and so it's all eerie and creepy and quiet. There's been a number of Bigfoot sightings there as well, but he felt as though he was sleeping one night, and he felt as though he was being summoned into the woods by something that he couldn't explain. It was like kind of telling him to walk up to the creek or the lake bed that he was camping on and keep going a little further. Now, albeit I think he was on psilocybin mushrooms at the time, but it's a strange thing, and it's a really good story if you ever go back and listen to his podcast about that. But he's a big dog man researcher as well, and he tends to think that maybe Bigfoot and dog man are acting in concert, that Bigfoot is kind of the malevolent guardian of another dimension, or benevolent, and the dog man would kind of be the opposite, the malevolent version of it. I don't really know where I'm going with any of this, but what do you think what do you think the dimension beyond would be?
That's a big question.
Yeah, sorry for the dead air there.
Yeah, sorry for the rambling and trying to come to a question when I'd had nothing prepared.
I don't even have any conception of what it could possibly be. You know, I think the only people who know are people who've at least allegedly been there, and you will run into people like that, people who think they've seen the fairy world, Rip Van Winkles, changelings, fairy abduction survivors.
Yeah, do you know anything about the Fae?
Well, I can talk to you about old European legends, but
I'd love to hear
about it. Much to add to the discussion is the problem, you know.
Can you tell us some of these legends?
Well, you know, there's the stories of helpful homebound elves who will clean your house for you, provided you feed them. You know, there's concepts of malevolent fairies stealing babies and swapping them out for babies of their own that'll grow up to be just not quite right. You know, we'd probably describe it as bipolar or schizophrenic today, but I don't think that that's necessarily any more or less likely than anything else. So you have these concepts of changelings. You have this idea that they're fighting their own wars with their own kingdoms in our physical world, but they are beyond our perception, which does also dovetail nicely with this same idea of ultra-terrestrials and interdimensional manifestation. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else? I've always associated like a lot of these types of things together, like, you know, fairies, elves, Bigfoot, Dogman, you know, like I tend to play with it mostly on the idea of like an interdimensional level, not the flesh and blood, like we were talking about earlier. And, you know, the idea that those things, I mean, all this stuff could be happening right in front of us, but it's outside of our visual range.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's probably the best way to stay aware of it or to try and conceptualize it for other people. You know, it's not like they're literally in the upside down from Stranger Things or something. Right, right. It's happening in our world. We just aren't capable of perceiving it at a molecular level.
Right.
Do you think that all the common cryptid stories that we hear as Americans fall into this category of being kind of interdimensional or from this hidden world that not everyone can see?
I wouldn't say that they necessarily all do, but it should probably be the default assumption because it makes for a better operating theory than anything else.
What other cryptids have you done deep dives into that you actually subscribe to?
That's a good question. I suppose it probably depends a lot on how you define cryptid. You know, I think, for instance, that the Hat Man, you know, the supposed ruler of the shadow people, is a very real thing, though, you know, just what he is also up for a matter of debate. I tend to believe in Bigfoot, yeah. So Bigfoot, Dogman, the Hat Man. I think that people made pretty good cases for the Chupacabra, though I don't know much about them myself to really pass judgment. I think it's entirely possible that egregores, which are, it's a term for beings that are sentient and feed off the collective belief in their existence. I think that if you accept that phenomena is at all possible, then you also have to be prepared to think that things like the Slender Man are real.
Yeah, that's
so. I think that works for a short list, anyways. Yeah.
Have you ever personally seen any cryptids?
No, nope.
No. I mean, neither.
I wish.
I'm in the same boat. I've never seen anything even close, I suppose. Or aliens for that matter, or ghosts. But I'm always waiting.
Yeah, I have one situation where I'm pretty certain a ghost tried to grab me by the shoulder once, but
yeah,
even that could be a lot of different things.
I've had some spiritual like experiences, you know, where I feel like my ancestors are there. Like I feel like there's people with me when there aren't, but I mean, it's just kind of it's a feeling. It's not, you know, I haven't ever, you know, seen something move that shouldn't have moved or anything right. like that, or felt, you know, a tap on the shoulder or a grab of the arm or, you know, anything.
Some of the other stuff you associate with those stories, right?
Right. Nothing that I could like say, no, I saw the book fly off the shelf or, you know, anything like that. but I'm so open to it. You know, I feel like, why do these things pass me by, man?
At a certain point, and this is just some thinking I've done before, I wouldn't commit to this if a person made me, but I almost wonder if there's a certain something to gradations of openness. And that's so often why researchers don't see them for themselves. I wonder if the fact that people who do research these topics are already actively engaged in belief means that the object of the research is going to be less likely to reveal itself because it does not need to convert a skeptical person to a believer. It's already feeding on the energy of your belief. Whereas there's a better case to be made that someone who has a cultural openness but not an actual belief makes for a better food source, because then you're creating more believers by revealing your presence.
Oh, that's well put, man. That's a great way to think about it.
Yeah. I had a really good question I was going to ask, and I forgot because I was taking in what you just said. Chudex, what do you have?
Well, I don't know. What other... are there, I guess we've kind of already been down what other cryptids are there any cryptids that haven't come up that you take an interest in?
No, I think we covered most of the usual suspects at any rate. Mm-hmm. You know, sea monsters are a fascinating thing, but I don't even know how to begin with them. And the only body of water I live near is the Mississippi River. So.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
I've heard you talk about some other really killer conspiracies type things on Gaslight Hour before too. Like one that I remember you talking about was the Moonface people. And that was really intriguing to me. I'd never heard of it before, and I don't think I've heard anyone talk about that again since. You got anything you want to say about that?
No, that's something that Ted and I, one of my other co-hosts from Gaslight, have meant to come back to, and it just keeps getting put on the back burner for all the other stuff we're working on. It's a topic we want to do more with, but it's one of those issues where there's just not enough time in the day to right. become conversant in the appropriate tribal legends of native tribes that we don't live around, you know?
Right.
Oh, well, speaking of native tribes, do the native tribes of Wisconsin and the plains have any dogman lore in their cultures?
They very well could, but they haven't shared it with me if they do.
Okay.
I know that's a disappointing answer, and I've actually been working for quite some time to try and find someone who knows a little bit about Ho-Chunk or Blackhawk lore to talk with me, and I just have never been able to get it to line up. So that answer may be pending.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your honesty. Let's see.
You know, something I kind of like to share with you is I don't have any idea what the topic was when you were some episode where you were talking, could have even been Fagcast or something, but you were talking about what you did at work, like at whatever, I don't know what you did for work, but it was that you would spend time, like when everybody was new, whenever you had a new coworker, you would try to like red pill them on some things.
Oh, and
you would
show
them videos of like stargates and cool shit like that. And see where they would
one
go.
Of my previous positions, right? I was doing overnight security, which I still do now, but with a different employer. But at the time, I was at an industrial site. We had an office separate from everyone else's, and a large part of our job duty was just watching CCTV cameras. So a lot of times, to fuck with the new hires, I'd see just what they were woke on and what they weren't. You know, I'd throw on Coast to Coast AM clips about the Baghdad Stargate or about Bigfoot or about X, Y, or Z thing, just to try and feel out just what they're woke about, so I knew what I could talk to them about all night if we were going to be cooped up in a security office together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great. It like I do the same thing. I work with, you know, I'm like 40. I work, a lot of the guys I work with are like 20. And it's like this constant thing of me just trying to throw things out, like just say essentially crazy shit in front of them and see like what'll stick. Before you came on, just the intro here, I was telling Adam, I started talking to this 20-year-old today about Nephilim and giants and ancient mm-hmm. history. And, you know, he's like currently in college, and he was just like, he's like, I don't have time for this kind of stuff, but I did break him down. Eventually I just kept throwing stuff until something would stick. And I said something about, expanding Earth theory. And he was like, well, it's this now? Like, okay, this is something I could actually believe, right. You know?
And that's just it. You know, I think everyone's got their one thing. And if you can find it, you can kind of pry the door open to more. And that's where we can really do a lot of service for people by making them think.
Exactly. That's all I'm ever trying to do with, well, really just about anyone that I ever encounter, but especially these younger guys that I encounter. It's like, I don't know, people have such closed minds about so many things, but I know that everyone can open their minds. And it's like just finding that little shoehorn that you can wedge in there. And, you know, I mean, maybe they close right back up after you leave, but, you know, you never know when you're going to change someone's direction of thinking for the rest of their life.
Well, especially if you manage to pitch a few seeds of doubt through the door before it closed again.
Yes.
You know, you never know what's taking root.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paz, we're getting towards the end here. There's one last thing I get into everybody that I know that is big into cryptids. I'd bring up this question. Have you ever looked into any of the specific genre of Bigfoot erotica?
The important question.
No, I can't say I have. I have an active enough imagination that I don't need an author's help.
Okay, got it.
That's a respectable answer.
Yeah.
A follow-up question is often, why not?
Yeah.
Right.
But you gave it right there. That's great.
Yeah.
It's a, once again, it's a very, very interesting and specific genre of highly erotic romance novels. And some very select films as well, but it's out there. Look it up. My favorite title
no,
that I
no, I'm not going to look it up.
My favorite title that I bring up a lot is Seduced by the Bigfoot and Ravaged by the Yeti.
Incredible.
Yeah.
See, Adam, you never asked me that question, and my answer is no. And if their follow-up was why not, it's because I get it all from you. I get enough. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You provide me with all the Bigfoot erotica information I need.
Those books are on Amazon. I should order one. I should order one, and maybe I'll just do solo. I'll just read it. I'll read a chapter a week for an episode.
I think that's a great idea.
Okay, I'm doing it. Maybe I'll bring Deborah, my mother-in-law.
You read it. Oh yeah, read it.
Read it with Deborah. Oh my gosh, that would be the best.
Pause. Wow, that's certainly an idea.
Yeah. Pause. This has been a fun, informative episode. I'd like to come back a little bit more prepared next time with some more specific stuff that we can get into. It's definitely a topic that I think needs more digging. Chudex, what do you think?
I think absolutely. I mean, Dogman is I think you were the first person I heard talk about. I suppose I'd heard it said before, but I had never really looked into it until hearing those early episodes of yours. And it's just I'm always open to hearing more about it.
Yeah. And Paz, you're a fun guy to listen to on everything that you do.
Absolutely.
I love Timeline Earth, and it's always a special treat when I hear that you're gonna be on as well. Aaron and Bird and Carr sound like fun guys to be friends with. So
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys so much for having me. I would absolutely be open to being back at some point. I'd like to, in the spirit of honesty, which I'm always trying to promote, also like to apologize to your audience. I know I had to put this recording off once due to some family stuff that came up, but I am really sincerely glad we were able to make it work today. This has been a real treat, fellas.
Yeah. And we're really glad to have had you. Tower Gang sucks. And yeah. Thanks for being here, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, man. Right on, man. We'll talk to everybody later. Thanks for listening. Oh, pause. Yeah, so Timeline Earth, and in Timeline Earth, you have the Scarlet Thread Society, right? And then, and where else can we find you?
I have an incomplete archive of my content on Odyssey at Dogman Respector. I am also on the Gaslight Hour. And really, wherever fine conspiracy podcasts below a certain listenership clout level can be found.
Yeah.
You know, right, I'm not on the higher side chats yet, but give it time.
No, yeah, you got it. Yeah. Maybe. All right, pause. Well, thanks again, man. We'll talk to you soon, bro.
Sounds good.
All right. Bye. Thanks for listening, guys.